I'm Hillary.
And I'm Sandra. Coming up on the Quick and the Dirty podcast, we are going to talk BDSM.
Some people like it rough in the bedroom. We've got a wonderful guest named Roxanne to talk about her experience and how she found herself through BDSM. And also something that happened to you, Sandra.
We're going
to
talk about the guy that barked at me that one time. I swear to God, that actually happened.
The Quick and the Dirty Podcast with Hillary Welch and Sandra Plagakis.
All right, we're going to start off with the quick, and I sort of want to recreate a conversation that Hillary and I had the other day. I was driving to Montreal, and Hillary and I are talking on the phone. If you think for a minute that Hillary and I have these in-depth conversations, no, scratch that notion right now. So for 2 hours, we talked, and one of the things we talked about was whether or not we're good in bed, or we think we're good in bed.
Well, yeah, you want to know definitively whether you are or not, but yeah. You've only slept with your husband in the last little while, and he's a mute, so yeah. How do you know?
First of all, I've only slept with my husband the last long while, Hillary, 25 years. Like, that's a long time to be doing the same sex with the same guy.
And the same moves. Like, how do you keep that exciting?
I didn't even know there were more than two moves until I started this podcast, to be perfectly honest with you. But we do a podcast about sex and relationships, and somewhere along the line, people think I'm this expert. It's like, dude, my sex game is not strong at all. In fact, if I had to rate myself out of 10, I'd be like, I think I'm a 3 in bed. Like,
what?
Honestly, I think I'm a 3. I mean, when the starfish is your finishing move, you're a 3 in bed. Come on.
What do you think? What is this, wrestling? Do you wear a singlet?
Like, when you just lie there and hope that it's over, maybe you're a 2, actually.
That's just called being married.
Yeah, maybe you're right about that. What number would you give yourself?
I think I'm a solid 8 out of 10.
What?
Like, I think what I lack in presentation, I make up for in effort.
So you're a hard worker in bed. You're a hard worker in bed.
Well, yeah. There's still some allure in my relationship, and we're still discovering stuff about each other, so it's still fun. But I think when you know exactly what you need to do to get the job done, we're all lazy people. Eventually, it gets to that point.
Fair enough. That's actually fair enough. But there's a part of me that would be like, okay, if I could get a controlled environment where I knew 100%, hey, put it this way, hotel sex. Hotel sex is better than Ottawa sex any day of the week, right?
Well, I don't know why that is. Is it because you don't have to worry about washing the sheets after?
It's all of it. And then you don't have to worry about being loud. The neighbors aren't there. Like, who cares? You can be anybody you want to be in a hotel room. That's why it's great. So Jamaica. Let's think of the tropical island. You're on vacation. It's hotel sex. And if I was to have sex there, but if I could get like a third party to come in and watch and then like rate me, that's what I'd like somebody to just, an objective third party, be like, wow, that's a good move. And I'd like to be rated objectively. I would love to know.
You really think, I would, that is my hell, my personal hell, because I'm self-conscious enough. I don't want a bystander. Like, all they're doing is looking. And as I said, when I make up what I lack in presentation, I make up for in performance.
Okay, one may mirror, like it's a police lineup or something. Somebody's on the other side of the glass. You can't see them, but you're being rated on your thing. I mean, I feel like I could bring it up to a 5 is all I'm saying.
How much effort do you feel you actually put in at this point? And is it because you're married and you know how this all ends?
Yeah, I know the series of moves that are going to come at any given time. There is nothing the man can do in bed that will surprise me at this point. Nothing.
But you're saying you as a lover, are you bringing anything new and exciting?
Yes, because of this podcast, we have all kinds of titillating conversations that give me all kinds of ideas. And when I go back and I try to like do something different, it's met with confusion.
Fear?
It's like, yeah, he does not like anything that is outside of the norm of the script. We cannot go off script. So because of that, I feel that he's keeping me at a 3. So I'd like to blame him for keeping me at a 3. I range between a 3 and a 5, honestly. But
okay.
Before Tim, I think
5 is the day that you shave your legs, right?
That's exactly right. It's a Saturday and I've had a good night's sleep. Because sleep plays a big part in how much effort I'm willing to put into something. But like I maybe like 20-year-old Sandra would have been like a 6. Maybe maybe I think I've been a 7 at my best once.
Really? That's it?
Yeah. I mean, I try really hard and all of those things, but because of my hang-ups, which I have far fewer hang-ups now than I used to. Or maybe it's the other way around.
I think it might be the other way around.
I think it might be the other way around. But you know, when you're new, I don't know. I think 7 is as good as it ever got with me.
Well, I think also as we get older, that idea that something is naughty and titillating completely leaves. Because
fair.
Nothing's new and naughty. You
Nothing
know
is
what
new
it
and
is.
Naughty. And you know, you're having a bad day when you actually have to take breaks during sex because you get Charlie horses, which I get all the time now, or my hip will start to cramp and I'll have to like reposition myself and it'll be like, hold on, water break, and I'll have to stop and drink some like fluids.
Right. But I like to present those more in a positive light. Like that's delayed gratification. We're making this last longer.
Right, yeah.
It's like, I'm pulling a sting move. This is tantric now because I need some water.
Well, what I'm doing is just buying time, but you don't need to know that.
Right.
Until the kink works out of my hip.
Right. So, you know how we were talking about things being titillating and new and how it makes it more exciting?
Well, let me just start off by introducing this guest with a Rihanna quote. And it is very simply this: sticks and stones may break my bones, but chains and whips excite me. Too much? Do you think I came in too hot there, Hillary?
Too hot? You never.
Never. Today.
Not hot enough.
Not hot enough. But this episode is definitely going to get hot. And I'm very fascinated by this world and very excited that we have today's guest who is going to talk about her BDSM lifestyle. So please welcome to the Quick and the Dirty, Roxanne.
Hello, Ooh. Sandra and Hillary. Thanks for having me.
I almost feel like you should have sung that, Roxanne, except you don't have the red light. You're just enjoying your life.
Well,
that's right.
I could have a red light. I was actually going to start singing the Rihanna song, so now I'm confused.
Oh, well, listen, I think I'm the most confused because I won't lie when I say this. I'm not 100% what BDSM stands for. Right. I know there's some bondage and maybe some sadism and maybe some masochism, but I'm confused about the D.
The D. Well, the D is really good, but the D in BDSM stands for discipline.
Okay, so it's bondage.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's discipline.
Bondage, discipline, uh-huh. Sadism, and masochism.
Yeah, but you have to understand BDSM's kind of like an umbrella. So you've got the umbrella, BDSM's at the top, and then the spokes come down, and there's like a lot of different spokes with different kind of categories within BDSM.
So. Different spokes for different folks, I get it.
So where do we start on a podcast about BDSM? I guess we can really just start from the beginning. How does somebody get into the BDSM lifestyle?
Getting into it, I could tell you about myself. I started looking online. That's kind of where you search for things that are taboo these days, I suppose. You don't just walk up to someone and be like, hey, girl, you know something about BDSM? Tell me about it, you know? So I started.
So how did you discover it was something that you were into?
I started getting curious and I started Googling about, you know, the dominance and submission stuff. And I came across a few different websites. The one that kind of stuck in the most popular would be FetLife.
Yes, right? That's right.
So
I've
heard
of that, yes.
It's like Facebook for kinky people.
Hillary, we've actually picked up a lot of guests from FetLife.
Oh, have you?
I don't know if you know that, but I do.
We don't troll for guests on FetLife, but we probably could.
So I should know a little bit about BDSM if you're on FetLife.
Well, I'm not on FetLife. I should be now, but I mean, let's get to ground zero here.
Right, ground zero. So FetLife, I was living somewhere not near a big city. It was kind of smaller. I was working a job where, you know, you kind of have to be careful what's out there. So I was a little nervous about starting to explore. So I stuck to the online stuff. Remind me to get back to kind of online stuff later.
Okay.
Once I moved away from there and was in a bigger city, that's when I actually really started going to the clubs and meeting people. And something that might not be understood mainstream is BDSM is a community. There's a community of people that enjoy similar interests, and you don't just walk into a dungeon and start being whipped or spanked or start spanking someone. It starts with learning. You have to learn the things. You have to get to know people. And there are events like munches, right, or sloshes. And they're called this because people get together at a restaurant and eat. So it's a munch. But they're eating and socializing and meeting people. And it's through meeting these people and learning through them that eventually they might end up at the club being spanked. Right? That's how I got started.
So that's first contact is what you're saying.
Yeah. That's how I got started. I started meeting people, going to sloshes, going to munches. The first time I went to a BDSM club, wholly overwhelming. People just on crosses and spanking benches, naked, walking around. It was like I was in heaven. I belong here. These are my people.
You weren't like terrified?
I was nervous, but once I got there, it was so natural. It's the most accepting community I've ever come across, regardless of.
Why do you think that is?
Well, we are being spanked and whipped and hit for pleasure. And you know what I mean? So why wouldn't we accept someone who lives an alternative lifestyle or different from the norm?
Right. You see a likeness in each other. And obviously you form this community and that's how you all bond.
That's right.
But when did you know that you liked a good spanking or like to give a good spanking?
I guess after my first, right? I learned about it. I watched for quite a while, and then I just dove in, and I started meeting people and doing scenes, and you know, the people I ended up meeting did it the right way. They introduced me to things the right way. They helped me learn. I started going to seminars and discussions and just really getting into understanding how everything works before I actually dove in. But then once I dove in, it's like, look out world, because Roxanne's in the building.
Did you ever wonder, okay, you knew that you liked the BDSM lifestyle. You knew that it was a pleasure pain kind of a thing, whether you inflict it or you enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever ask yourself, what is it in you that makes you want to feel the pain and how do you get pleasure from that?
I love that question because I hate pain. I don't like it. There are some people who enjoy the pain. Okay, they don't get warmed up. They just love feeling the pain. It's cathartic, meditative. And you know, when your body gets a lot of pain, it starts releasing those pain chemicals, adrenaline, cortisol, endorphins, you know, oxytocin even. And you can achieve kind of an altered state of being through a BDSM scene. And I think that might be one of the biggest reasons that people actually go through it is not because they enjoy the pain, but to achieve that kind of relaxation almost. You know, you get a flogger going on someone's back and they'll tell you it feels like a massage. You can use different floggers that sting more or whatever, but not every aspect of BDSM is pain.
Do you like inflicting pain?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like receiving pain? Can you be one or the other or both?
You can be one or the other or both. You know, there's tops, bottoms, dominants, submissives, cats, dogs. Like there's all sorts of different people. When you go to the club, you could see someone crawling on all fours with a tail sticking out of their bum.
Hello.
You know what I mean? Wearing a leather mask with ears and a ball gag. Like it's very individual. It's very personalized.
So where does your preference lie?
I started out as a bottom/submissive. Anyone that knows me, you know me.
I know you.
Strong, independent woman, taking charge, can be seen as bossy, but that's my everyday life. You know, you go into the club and that's where you want to relinquish that control. And that's kind of what I get out of it as a submissive when I'm in that kind of frame of mind is I'm giving up control because being in control can be stressful. Taking that control away with someone you trust is freeing. So you could put yourself at someone's feet and say, oh, own me or, you know, do what you will with me, but you're relinquishing that control. So you feel free for that time.
You know, we've talked to a femdom before. I said dominatrix, but femdom, I believe, was the appropriate term. And she was talking about some of the men that she dominated, and they would be like high-powered men who have control of their day-to-day, making big money, you know, patriarchal family kind of thing. And then they want to be completely dominated at the end of the day because they don't ever give up control. But in a controlled environment, it's is it sexually liberating, or is it like what kind of liberation are they getting from it?
Again, it's individual, because often when I'm in BDSM and doing BDSM activities, sex is not even involved. It's not even playing a factor. So these men, some of them could be getting off sexually and some might not be. It could just be, you know, mental, being free, feeling the different things that they're going to feel. Everybody's going to feel different things.
Now, Roxanne, you come from a pretty traditional family, and I won't go into too much detail, but you come from a traditional family, relatively strict family. Do you think that plays into it somehow?
I mean, I was afraid of sex till I was 18. You know, I didn't have sex till I was 18. So just based on how I was raised and, you know, you can't have a boyfriend till you're 30 and stuff like that. So when I lost my virginity, I lost it to two guys and a girl.
You went, as they say, go big or go home, right?
You know, so I lived in fear of it for so long, and then I just jumped in, and, you know, the 20s were wild, and now I've calmed down a bit.
Was it your rebellion from your family? Like, is this a little bit of a rebellion, or is it your way to kind of still be connected to that sort of strictness?
That's actually a very good question.
Wow, that is a good question. Wow, maybe
that's
there's some
deep there.
Some mommy and daddy issues built into this one. Huh?
Well, you know, a lot of people can have mommy and daddy issues, and there actually is, in that umbrella, one of the spokes, is age play.
Age play? Age play. So that means you, go ahead. Go ahead, Roxanne, paint that picture.
And you know, there's going to be a lot of people who say, oh, age play, that's gross, that's pedophile, whatever. But what you have to understand, age play is not always or even most of the time sexualized. It's reverting back to a mindset of a child. And it can be not just freeing, but healing. Emotional healing can take place when the little, as they're called, reverts to that kind of age. And they can go from, you know, 14, 12, 3. And it's mostly about being cared for and the nurturing. So whoever they could be doing it by themselves. Grab a coloring book, sit down, let yourself get to that frame of mind. There could be a big, what they call, you know, or a daddy or a mommy. And what they do in the privacy of their bedroom is just that. And it's fantasy. What you have to understand, fantasy is not reality. So they're not, you know, if they're age playing, does not mean that they're going to go
something
illegal, right?
No, just to be clear, we're talking about two consenting adults
exactly.
who are, that's a different story entirely. Mm-hmm. The content of the story, however, is a little disturbing on the surface. Any notion that you pretend to be 3 years old and your mommy or your daddy comes and plays with you.
It could be disturbing to someone looking in from the outside.
Yeah.
But when you see how the community works, when you see that everything is consensual and you learn that you have the right to say no, even if you said yes 2 minutes ago, you change your mind, you walk away, you have that right. It's all about making sure that people are safe and being safe. And I mean, other than that, I can't really say because I don't see it as a bad thing. And most people in the community don't.
I'm trying to wrap my head around it, and the only way I can possibly do that is when you were talking about people wearing ears and a tail in their bum. The person who's walking them around on a leash isn't going to go out and make love to a dog.
No, exactly. Well, you know,
that's the only way I can wrap my head around it, because it grosses me out.
It's a very slim chance, because there are people who are not in BDSM who will go out and do that. It's just, it's disgusting, it's gross, but just because people have fantasies does not mean they will ever act out on them.
Further to that, Hillary, can I just say that many, many years ago, I was at this Halloween party and, you know, it was a dress up party and we're all drinking and everything's having a good time. And some guy walks into the party. No, so a girl, sorry, walks into the party with a guy who was on a leash and he was on all fours. and she was walking him around like a dog. And like, we're all having a good laugh. This is a great whatever. And then someone whispered in my ear saying, this is real. That guy, she's the femdom and he's the submissive.
Yeah.
And so once I realized that the odds that these guys are at a Halloween party pulling this off is like, you fit in, but it's real. So that at one point, and I kid you not, guys, I'm just going to say this, Montreal. And so she walks him over to us. We're sitting on couches and she puts him in front of us. He's on all fours, puts a bowl of chips on the guy, and we're like eating chips off of him. He's then a table.
Objectification. And some people get huge benefits out of just being objectified. And I know it sounds weird. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean someone else won't.
It was
hilarious.
An odd thing, though, that she would bring him
Halloween
into. But still.
Is our favorite
like
holiday.
Like into a party where not everybody is a willing participant in his.
Exactly.
Role play.
Yeah. That's what I found odd about it, that she just would bring him out into the real world and we were all supposed to be like, cool.
But it was Halloween, so who cares, right? If it was any other day, what I would say to that is you're basically forcing your kink on other people who have not consented to be a part of this.
The guy was able to hold that cheesy bowl perfectly, and I didn't have any complaints. He didn't move, he didn't whatever, and when he did move, I went, hey, stop moving. I started getting into it as a joke.
That's awesome.
But
did you use him as a footstool?
Should have.
I made him do my taxes while he was there. Is that wrong? So, but I remember like at first being really uncomfortable by it, mm-hmm. and then watching him, feeling embarrassed for him,
yeah.
because the man had a leash on him.
I love being led by a leash. I don't know, I can't even tell you why, but it's great. When I'm in that, you know, that submissive kind of headspace, that's one of my favorite things. Just grab the leash and tug me along. Maybe it's that lack of control.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And everybody, like once you were all drinking, it took a while, but once we got there, we're like, you know what? They are consenting adults, mm-hmm. and this is their groove, and this is a pretty cool space. This is Montreal. For God's sake, this is Montreal. We're like, fill your boots and give me some goddamn cheesies while you're down there. Thanks.
Exactly.
So yeah, all right. So leashes.
Right.
So, Roxanne, I have a question for mm-hmm. you. So you find your way into BDSM and you're exploring it. What did it mean for you as a person, a developing adult, your own personal well-being?
I would have to say it got me through some rough times. It got me through some good times. And it's just kind of been a constant in my life since I found it. It did help me discover myself in the sense that, you know, I used to be afraid of saying no. I used to be, you know, worried, oh, I already said yes. Now if I say no, they'll get mad. I mean, consent plays such a huge part in this lifestyle, in any lifestyle, really. In life, consent is first and foremost. But what you'll find in the BDSM community is I won't even touch someone's shoulder without asking. Whereas in, you know, the real world, you might do that because we're humans and human touch is important. And sometimes people don't find it's weird, but because of what we're doing when we are at the clubs or when we are at these parties, you know, when I say, can I touch you? That is showing that I have respect for their consent in any way. Same with hugs. Like you don't just walk up to someone and hug them. Whereas it could be a social norm there. It's, can I hug you? Because some people just don't want to be hugged or touched.
Are you always role-playing in the BDSM community? I mean, you and I are having a conversation, and Hillary too, and we're all chit-chatting. Are you like this before you? I mean, I just want to know, like, are you regular Roxanne, and then there's BDSM Roxanne, and then you flip into a role? Or are you always playing a role in the community?
Yeah. Right. Are you ever playing yourself?
Yeah. I don't like the term role-playing. I got into it by role-playing, but when you've got a dominant and a submissive, for example, and they're doing a scene, it's not necessarily changing roles. They're always the same person, but in a scene, those roles might become more prevalent. So a submissive will be put in the headspace by the things their dominant does. There's often protocols that will get the submissive into that headspace and ready to serve or do whatever it is the dominant requires of them. But it's, for me, I'm me whether I'm on my knees or holding a whip over someone, which, by the way, it takes a highly skilled professional to use a whip. Don't just go buy one and expect to be able to use it.
Noted.
You know, start with a crop or a soft flogger, okay?
A flogger, writing it down.
Floggers are great. If you learn a flogger, it's like, it's better than a massage sometimes.
Really? Because it looks like it hurts like hell.
No, it depends on the material the flogger is made of. There are different types of leathers that could be used, from soft to stingy. Some are thuddy. I prefer thuddy over stingy, to be honest.
Do you feel like you've become a different person since getting involved in BDSM?
I mean, I got involved in my late 20s, and now I'm in my early 30s, and there's usually change in that period of your life. Has it changed me? I think it's given me more confidence in myself. It's given me, you know, overall, I don't think it changed me too much. It's just, like I said, it's always been a part of me. So when I found it, it was like I came home.
So you didn't feel like you necessarily fit in before, and now you found your people?
Exactly. See, you gave me words that I couldn't put to words before. And that's it. Like, I felt like I was coming home. These are my people. I was always someone who would flit around the outside. Everybody was drawn to me. They liked me. But I just couldn't really connect with these people for whatever reason. I show up in the club or at a munch, and I'm right in there. I feel like I'm home.
You know, listening to this conversation, just obviously the brain will naturally tend to go to
50 Shades of Grey.
Sorry, how did I even forget that? Is it anything like the world we've seen in 50 Shades of Grey?
50 Shades of Grey was, I guess, a good way to get it into the mainstream media and get people talking about it, curious about it. But if you really analyze the movie scene by scene, which I'm not going to do right now, but if you were going to sit there with a BDSM, we'll call them a BDSM teacher or you know, someone who's very learned about BDSM, which I'm not. Like, I'm just living, and I'm sort of newish, being only 5 years. It's a good glimpse. It's BDSM light. But there are a lot of factors that are concerning. And the most concerning thing for me is the fact that they portray Christian as having been severely abused when he was a child, right? And that's why he's in a BDSM. And that abuse from childhood led to abuse in his teens from this woman who was his dominant, or however that goes. It's saying, oh, I'm like this because I was abused. Well, That's not what's going on. I'm not in BDSM because I was abused or because I'm broken. Lots of people might have mental health issues, but who doesn't these days? You know, some people might be broken and they're in BDSM. You have to be able to discern and get to know people and really know what they're about. Because the way Christian Grey handled it in the movies, bringing Anastasia into it, she really wasn't into it, was
no,
she?
Not at
she
all.
She really did not.
There
like
was no
it.
Consent.
There was consent. She signed a paper, but the problem is, real world, if I'm new going into the community and someone snatches me up like that, they are considered a predator and they are not welcome at the BDSM events. They will warn new people, stay away from this person because he's like that. Okay.
Yeah, it's like he's a recruiter.
Christian could have taken her in, had a relationship with her, started teaching her, bringing her to events to learn and see what she likes and doesn't like. You know, she might like the floggers. She might like being tied up. She obviously didn't like the pain because that's what messed her up. She's saying, why do you want to do this to me? You're crazy. You're broken, whatever. It's just a bad portrayal about BDSM. However, the Red Room, every person's dream. We all want a red room like that.
Looking at a new IKEA kitchen for me. It just got me excited. Roxanne, I got it back to the movie for a second, and consent. Consent was a big part of the movie because of the negotiation they had and the contract she was forced to sign. Is that part of it very real in terms of, you talk about two consenting adults, and there is a negotiation on the front end, right? And what does that look like?
Negotiating is basically the foundation of any BDSM interaction. And there's different types of negotiations. There's the negotiations where I'm getting to know someone who's a potential partner, likely going to go much slower, get to know them, discuss what they're into, what they're not. If we end up taking it into a BDSM direction, we're going to sit down, do the BDSM checklist, which is this huge list, you know, talking about, oh, I don't even know where to start, handcuffs, spanking, breath play.
I'm sorry.
Breath play.
What's breath play? What's
choking breath? Inhibiting breath, right? There are safe ways to do it, by the way. Just different types of things. And you say, have you done this? Have you not? Yes, no. On a scale of 1 to 5, what's your interest or how much did you enjoy it, et cetera. So they could fill out this form and then go over it and really discuss in depth what they're both into.
It really should be the submissives.
Well, yes.
The submissive is in more control, really, than the dominant.
They are. And the dominant really, it's an honor for the dominant when a submissive kind of hands themselves over, but it's not done lightly, right? So I was talking about in the relationship kind of heading that way, how it might go. But obviously, there's many different paths. One of the things that I tend to do is some pickup play. Go to a club. I'm experienced enough now. I know what I like. I know what I don't like enough that I can meet someone. We have a great connection. Hey, let's go do some play. So how do you do that with a complete stranger? First of all, chances are you're not at the club by yourself. Okay, so you let your friend know this is what's going on. Or if you are at the club yourself, they have people walking around specifically making sure that people's consent are being respected, that the safe words being used are being respected. There are people on guard for that. So I meet this person, we want to do a scene. How are we going to do that? Well, we do a negotiation. And when you're doing something with someone new, you'll discuss, okay, well, what do you like? What don't you like? What do you want to do? And you discuss ahead of time everything you're going to do in that scene. So we might say, okay, well, I enjoy spanking, impact play, hair pulling, you know, the different kinds of things I like. Then he'll say, okay, well, I'd like to use this on you. He'll show you the implements or what he's going to do, and he'll talk you through it. And then you're prepared. So you consent to all of this. Now, in the middle of play, if the top decides that they want to do something else that wasn't discussed, they can, but it becomes a bit tricky because I was talking to you earlier about all the hormones that are released when you're doing this kind of play.
Yeah.
It's possible that you're not all there, right, at this point. So the dominant has to decide, okay, can they make the decision to allow this? Can they consent to this right now? And if they don't feel they can, they don't do it. If they feel they can, they'll say, look it. And they could do it sensually. They could do it in any way they want. But they show the submissive, this is what I'm going to be using next. That gives the submissive a chance to say yay or nay.
Do you have a safe word?
Banana.
That's your safe word? Love it.
You know,
what are the odds?
Your safe word could be anything. In the community, the general safe words are yellow, red. Yellow means kind of slow down or take a step back, give me a chance to breathe and check in with me, whereas red is the entire scene stops no matter what.
I'm so confused about banana now.
It's just a random word because your safe word could be anything. But when you're at parties, we generally stick to the green, yellow, red. Or purple sometimes.
I don't know what purple means, but
no, but I yell out. There's a funny story. So I was doing a scene with some friends, and I was in their house, and I was laying on a massage table, and I was being beaten by all these hitty things, right? And I'm just floating. I'm happy. I'm euphoric. I'm barely verbal. I'm happy. They try to check in with me. They ask me what my color is, right? I just yell out purple because
that's your euphoric color.
I mean, I suppose, but I thought they were beating me with the purple hitty thing. I'm trying to the cane.
The cane.
That's the purple cane. It's like a purple plexi. Anyways, it was hurty, and so I was hurting, but I yelled out purple instead of green for whatever reason.
And did they take as a sign to continue? What happened there?
I'm pretty sure they ended up bringing it to an end, figuring I was pretty far gone and happy by that point.
They pulled out the manual and they're like, purple. What does that mean?
This was like 4 years ago and they still make fun of me for it, of course. Why not?
So you come from a very traditional family.
Mm-hmm.
Did they have any idea this is the life that you live?
They have no clue. Well, my sisters know because they're like the next generation. They don't care. You know, they understand, they're accepting, whereas the parents,
But you know what? At the same time, Hills, I think that's a fair question. But at the same time, who discusses their sex life with their parents anyway? You know, I wouldn't tell my parents that I have like a vanilla sex life. They don't care.
Yeah.
Why would it bother? Why would it be any information they need to know if I if I like to get spanked a little bit?
They prefer to be oblivious. They think you're a virgin and let them live happily like that.
Oh, God bless their soul. They think you're a 30-something virgin?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Well, sweet. Isn't that precious? You
know, well, my father does.
Oh,
anyways.
God love him. Yeah. God love him. Yeah. Aren't they sweet?
Bless his heart. Pretty much. You know, but my life is not just BDSM, right? I do live kind of on the alternative side, not just BDSM and kink, but a little bit of swinging, a little bit of polyamory. It's just I want to be my authentic self, and I hide it from very few people. My dad being probably the only one, right? I'll be open about it. I'll talk about it. That's why I'm here. And I'm not the most knowledgeable person. I sometimes have difficulty recalling information I've learned through the years, but I know enough to keep myself safe, right?
What gets you off about it? Is it that it's supposed to be naughty? So that like kind of turns you on?
I'm sure that's how it started. You know, that taboo, anything that's taboo can be exciting. But it's, like I said, it's not even sexual for me these days. And I'll get into it a little bit. So one of the most important things when you're looking into BDSM, alternative lifestyle swinging, is the safer sex practice, right? You want to be safe. You want to communicate with your partners. You want to protect yourself. So I have HPV, which has put a little bit of a knot in my sex life, let's say. But that hasn't impeded my ability to enjoy BDSM, because my HPV means that not many people will want to risk having intercourse, but that doesn't take away toys. That doesn't take away hands. You know, the risk for oral is very minimal. So more people with dental dams and condoms, they'll be fine. So I can still enjoy these things. When we talk safer sex practice, it's not shocking to see someone being fingered while the person's wearing gloves. Because if you're just meeting someone or you don't know their sexual history, and you have a little cut in your hand, who knows what can happen, right? So that's just, it's an aspect
also
of it.
Also fingernails.
Yeah,
ow!
Fingernails. Yeah. Well, yeah, some nails.
I'm just listening to this Roxanna Hills and I'm thinking, damn, the world has changed. Like, what happened to just going to a bar, getting drunk, and then just having sloppy sex with some guy back at his apartment going back? Now I'm checking for cuts on your finger?
Well, that's
great, though, that everybody's so, I mean, obviously all of the sexual education that has been supplied is working.
And, you know, it's pretty sad, though, because every time I have to tell someone about my HPV, they don't know. They don't know the information about it. I actually have to sit there and I become an encyclopedia and I explain it all to them. So not a lot of people are as aware of safer sex practices as I would like, but they are really starting to try and end the stigma behind it.
I can't believe that there isn't more of a push in that community for people to get vaccinated.
You know, I didn't even know that I could get the vaccination until after I had it.
None of us did.
Yeah.
Yeah, none of us did.
And now the 9-year-olds are getting it free, but if I want to go get it, because it would probably help my immune system fight it, $600 minimum.
I just got it. I just got it last year. I went to my gynecologist, and she actually said to me, I'm not trying to jinx your marriage. I'm like, I've been with a guy for 24 years. We're good. But she said, just in case anything happens, you should always get the HPV. And you're right. It's expensive.
I wish I'd gotten it, because I've been living with it now for over 5 years.
Yeah.
I got into BDSM after, and it felt like my life was kind of ruined when I found out. Now I'm much more comfortable talking about it, obviously, but it was kind of demoralizing at the time. But so BDSM, safer sex practices, consent, you know, we're not quite 50 Shades of Grey. We're more responsible.
Everything that I hear about this community is just that, is that the community part of it is the thing that feels like draws you to it.
In a sense, but you know, within every community, there's going to be drama. And the BDSM community is not protected from that. See, what happens is in any community, you know, someone does something and then it gets blown out of proportion and then people pick sides and it becomes a little petty. But in this community, you know, a lot of what this stems from is, oh, he's a predator. Right.
Oh.
And then so if someone or she, right. But if someone is displaying predatory behavior and someone makes an accusation and then, you know, this part of the community believes the predator, this part of the community believes the victim, and it just gets blown out of proportion. So I think that's sort of what a lot of the communities I'm seeing are dealing with right now.
Well, it's so complicated because consent is such a huge part, but also people get excited by different things. And if you're going to be accepting, then it's all a communication issue, right?
Well, it is. But there are predators that come into this community thinking that they can prey on the new people who don't know how to be safe, who don't really get it yet. And we have to protect those newbies from these people. But sometimes, you know, one person says, this guy did this to me and it's not true. Well, then we've ruined someone's life. But how can you not support the victim? You know, because you don't know. It's between two people. It's a tough situation.
Yeah. When you talk about predators, are you talking about people who, just to be clear here, we're talking about people who come in, manipulate the rules that you have in place, and then try to hurt people?
It could be that. It could be, you know, people who pose as dominance and want to get to the newbies so that they can seclude them, isolate them, and abuse them.
Oh, boy.
It has happened. And, you know, there are people in the community who are very skilled at figuring this out, and they will be a voice for the new peoples to protect them. You know, there are sort of common sense but not so common sense things that you're going to want to keep in mind when you're engaging in learning about BDSM is that, you know, you want to set up safe calls. If you're going to meet someone for the first time, second time, you want someone to know where you're going, what you're doing. It's not a bad idea to ask them for a picture of their driver's license. You know, if they're not willing to give you something like that, why?
Fair enough.
Right?
Yeah. What about somebody who is listening to this podcast right now and they know that they want to dabble, just say?
I would say get yourself on FetLife, but there's a but. So FetLife, I said earlier, is like the Facebook of the BDSM community. FetLife is a great place to find out about events in your community. It's a great way to read about BDSM because lots of people blogging about it, lots of discussion groups. So you can dip your toes in without actually having to leave your couch. Once you feel a little more comfortable, you can, I would suggest you go to a Munch or a Slosh because it's very casual. People aren't walking around in leather. They're not wearing their collars. You know, they're just normal vanilla people having dinner. And
so really no gimp masks?
No.
Okay.
No, because you'd probably get kicked out because we need to maintain our vanilla appearance when we're in public because we don't want to A, offend people, but B, we can't out people. And that's another thing. You have to be careful. You know, if you know someone from the BDSM world and you run into them in the vanilla world, you don't say, hey, how was the dungeon the other day? Like, you don't know who they're with. You don't know what's going on. You just outed them to their boss. Like, come on, be careful. But
have you ever run into somebody at a Munch or a Slosh that you knew and you didn't expect to see?
You know, it's funny because I don't think I have. And I'm from a big city. I've been to plenty of events in that city and I haven't. So it's no wonder I didn't get along with people in my life.
You know? It's just a matter of time.
They weren't the right people.
Needed to meet the right people. That's right.
I got to say, years ago, I went to one of those traveling sex shows.
Okay.
And Ottawa, I don't know how and why, but Ottawa has like this big sex show that they do every year. And it's like the biggest show that we have. And of all places, Hills, yeah. Believe it or not, there's a lot of sex in Ottawa. Who knew? And
all those white collar people letting loose on the weekends.
I'm telling you, those are the ones. Yeah. Those are the ones that are probably part of these communities. And you'd never guess because, again, they have it's the people that you just don't suspect, right? So I walk into this sex show and the very first thing they do is they have something called the dungeon. Mm-hmm. And you have to walk through the dungeon to get to the rest of the exhibits and all the other fun stuff.
Okay.
But I witnessed things in there that I don't think I could.
Like what? No, you have to tell me.
There were two things that I saw that made me go, Well, that's different. The first one was a man wearing a dog mask.
Okay.
And everybody that walked in got barked at by him.
Like, did he get scritches? They like scritches.
What?
Scritches.
What
like,
is a scritch?
Oh, like, scritches. I'm like, what is
like
that?
You have a dog, you scritch its ear?
Like scratch its ear?
Scritches. They're scritches.
I'm not, listen.
We don't know the technical term. We're new to this.
I didn't know that that was like a sex thing for like people who wear dog masks.
Sex. You're not, it's not sex. It's a scritch.
It made me laugh because he was so into it.
Yes.
And I knew that just like the way he barked at me, there was nothing I could do to break that character. Like he was who he was at that moment.
Absolutely.
And then the next thing I saw that honestly I'll never unsee is an older gentleman. And when I say older, I'm saying like in his 70s, who was tied up, literally in handcuffs, and his feet were, and he was facing the wall in handcuffs, and he was all he was wearing were assless chaps. And he was being whipped by a woman in leather.
Nice.
And every time she spanked him, all I could hear was the crackling of his flesh.
Oh,
and
great.
Sounds like
a good night to me.
Well, he was having a good time. And all I could think of, all I could see was the pure enjoyment on his face. And that's what struck me.
Yeah.
I couldn't see the face of the dog man barking at me. But this old guy was like having the best day of his life. You're right.
Yeah, I know.
He wasn't even like scrinching.
But
wincing.
But he was wincing, but there was something else going on his face for
because,
sure.
For example, if she's using a whip when you walked in, chances are she did not just start using a whip on him. She built him up to it. So she warmed him up, warmed the skin up, warmed the muscles up, you know, use different implements, different tools, build up to that kind of pain level because whips hurt. And
don't I know?
This sounds very expensive.
Probably, yeah.
Hillary, you like all these implements and toys? I can't afford this.
Yeah, I know. She's experienced.
Listen
She's
to
hiding
her.
It from
she
us.
Knows. Listen, I'll cop to one thing for sure. Mm-hmm. I'll say this. The whole BDSM lifestyle is completely foreign to me, except for the one part of it that I can relate to. And that's I love getting my ass spanked.
So like, there you go.
But not like a spanking like I'm a kid. Like one good with a good wrist and action involved. But it can't be too. If it's too hard, then I'm not going to like it. But if it's too soft, I don't want it either. It's got to sting.
I can make you a bet right now that if you got a spanking from me, my specialty, you would enjoy it. And not only would you enjoy it, but you would actually end up tolerating more pain than you would have thought possible. And
Sandra, I think that this needs
to what's
happen.
Happening right now.
When you're done, you will be in a good
Can I just make an addendum to that earlier statement? Uh-huh. When I say spanking, I mean one. One, like when I'm walking by my husband and he gives me a good shot to the ass, I love it.
Yeah, but that's it.
But back up, we're done here.
And that's fine. You consent to what you want to consent to, but I would just say keep an open mind. Try three next time instead of the one and see what happens.
You've met my husband. He's only good for one.
Right.
You know that. Yeah, I'll get one.
Attention span of nothing.
It's all on the wrist, Hillary, wouldn't you say?
For me, it's less about the original spank and more about the tickle that comes after.
Gentle glide of fingers over
that's
the
right.
flesh.
Well, we're not all so far apart.
You got to cool it down.
Yeah, well, you know, sensation play is also a big part of BDSM.
And by the way, just one final clarification. Mm-hmm. Impact play. You said that. What's that?
Impact play, using implements like paddles.
Oh, I see.
Crops, even the hitty thing. I keep
the hitty thing.
I keep.
How do you hide all that stuff? Like, where do you keep this if you don't have a red room?
You have a tickle trunk?
Under the bed, in a tickle trunk, in the closet. It just depends on your living situation, but people find crafty ways to do it. I've never had to because I'm a grown ass adult.
I don't
live at home, you know, I don't have kids. Yeah. So,
like, how about marks? How do you deal with marks? Have you ever been busted for having like a weird bruise and someone asks you about it?
Here we go. Part of the negotiating process is you would ask the question, do you want marks? Do you like marks? Do you not want marks? Because some people obviously depends on what kind of clothes they have to wear for work. So they'll tell you where you can mark them and where you should not. The only story I have about a mark is actually pretty PG. It was a hickey. because I love being bitten, and I'm not just talking like hickey, I'm talking like hickey because I love being bitten hard. And I showed up at work, it's mid-August, must be 34 degrees out, and the only scarf I have is this beautiful silk scarf that I thought maybe I could wear in the middle of summer at 35 degrees, and I was working in sales, and I was boiling, but I tell ya, my sales manager, no idea, he's like, good job dressing up today. And then later the general manager's like, why are you wearing a scarf? I'm like, because. He's like, it's 35 degrees outside. I'm like, he's like, Roxanne, I'm really surprised. You know, you could use, I burned myself with a flat iron as an excuse. I've got four daughters. I've heard them all before.
Oh,
there's
wow.
one for you.
Okay. So it's too hot to wear a turtleneck was the right answer.
It was brutal.
And then
brutal.
You would have just laid it right there.
I'm sweating. I'm running around inside, outside. I'm wearing this scarf, just dying. And eventually I just, whatever, took it off.
Own it, yeah. Right?
Hey, listen, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast today. I learned a lot. I learned a lot.
Yeah, I feel like we only scratched the surface, too. I feel like there's so much more we could get into.
I like the little play of word there.
Scratch the surface.
Yeah, scratching is also part of BDSM. It's one of the spokes.
Thank you so much, Roxanne, for joining us on The Quick and the Dirty today. Now, FetLife, the website, FetLife.com.
That would be the place to go. Look at the events and find a slosh, find a munch. Just go start meeting people. You could even message a few people online. Say, hey, I'm new, looking for some friends to help kind of explore the life, the community. But you also want to use your safe calls and your safety measures, just like when you're meeting anyone online.
Just for the record, my safe word is pickles and always has been. I just wanted to put that out there. No one ever asked me.
Yeah.
Hillary, what's yours?
I don't have a safe word.
You need one now. Yeah. We've got to end with a safe word for Hillary.
Pomplamoose.
Pomplamoose.
Well, wait, if you're both going with P words, I want to be
purple.
Purple.
Stick with purple. Okay.
I suppose.
Good. So if I ever see you in the club and you hear me scream pickles, you know what to do.
I'll come save you, Sandra.
Thank you.
This episode is over, but the conversation doesn't have to be. Follow Hillary and Sandra on social. Instagram at Hillary on Air, at SandraKiss1053. Twitter at Hillary Welch, at SandraKiss1053. And on Facebook at Quick and Dirty Podcast. Got a question? Email Hillary and Sandra, thequickandthedirty@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can download the podcast each week to your mobile device to listen offline. Find The Quick and the Dirty on frequencypodcastnetwork.com, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts.